Hello and welcome to the Old Time Radio Hour. I'm your host, Justine Ward, and each week we bring you a classic show from radio's golden age. Tonight we have the founder of an acting dynasty starring in a Theatre Guild production. Sir Michael Redgrave was knighted for his tremendous talent on stage, and his three children all became renowned actors too. His two daughters, Vanessa and Lynn Redgrave, are very well known in America. His son, Corin Redgrave, was also an acclaimed actor. Michael Redgrave plays the lead in this mystery drama, which debuted in London's West End Theatre District in 1935. Theatre Guild does a wonderful job of adapting the story for radio. Enjoy Theatre Guild on the Air, The Unguarded Hour, first broadcast December 28, 1952 on NBC.
The United States Steel Hour presents the Theatre Guild on the Air, our play, The Unguarded Hour, by Bernard Merivale. Our stars, Michael Redgrave as Sir Francis Dearden, and Nina Foch as his wife, Yvonne. Helping to build a better America through better steels and products of steel is the job of the industrial family that serves the nation, United States Steel. Look for our trademark, USS, on any steel product. It's your guide to quality steel. Our broadcast, produced by the Theatre Guild, one of America's foremost theatrical producers, will now be introduced by Michael Redgrave.
Thank you, Mr. Brokenshire, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. A wise man once observed that time is made up of moments. In its presentation tonight, the Theatre Guild on the Air is offering a play in which one brief moment in a man's life seemed to make all time stand still. It is called The Unguarded Hour, and inasmuch as it is a drama of mystery and suspense, I can tell you no more. But in the hope that you will find it provocative and intriguing, we raise the curtain on The Unguarded Hour, adapted for us by Leslie Reed and directed by Homer Thicket.
BBC Home Service. Now here is an urgent police message which we are repeating. Will the lady who was on the summit of Eagle Rock near Lake Windermere in Westmoreland on May the 14th last and saw a man and woman standing on the plateau above the lake get in touch with the commissioner at New Scotland Yard? We repeat, this is urgent. In the interests of justice, this lady, whose name is not known, is earnestly requested to comply at once with this notice from Scotland Yard.
The Queen against Metcalf. John Metcalf, you stand indicted of felony for that on May the 14th last you did murder Phyllis Metcalf in the county of Westmoreland. How say you in answer to this indictment? Are you guilty or not guilty?
Not guilty.
Beg pardon, Sir Francis.
Yes?
The judge would like a word with you in his chambers. Would you go in, sir?
Oh, thank you. My lad?
Sir Francis. I wanted to see you before we resume this afternoon's session.
Yes, my lad?
I have a letter I want to show you. Possibly it's a bit irregular on my part, but then again, perhaps I owe it to you to call it to your attention. Here. I received it this morning.
The Women's League for Prison Reform. Mr. Justice Vining, we are writing your lordship to protest the tactics of the prosecuting counsel, Sir Francis Dearden, in the Metcalf case. Oh, so that's it. Now, I've been receiving those letters too, sir.
Sir Francis, I'm afraid this isn't quite your ordinary cranked letter. These people are of some importance. Read the rest.
After attending yesterday's cross-examination, we feel that Sir Francis Dearden, by the nature of his attacks upon the defendant, John Metcalf, has been infringing the rights of the defendant, and that it is incumbent on you, my lord, as the judge presiding, to restrain Sir Francis from any further infringement. Yours, etc. Beatrice Rogers, secretary. Outspoken type, Miss Roger.
Now, so far as I'm concerned, Sir Francis, while you've been driving Metcalf hard, I don't see that you've been hitting below the belt.
Oh, thank you, my lord.
But you might want to consider, mind you, I merely raised the question, whether or not public opinion isn't being needlessly provoked. This case has more than the usual interest, or drama, if you like. For example, the appeals on the radio for the missing witness.
Missing?
And Metcalf doesn't seem to strike people unsympathetically.
Oh, yes. But the police say that he murdered his wife, and if you have no censure of my conduct of the case, sir...
No, I said I haven't, sir.
Then, by your leave, sir, I shall continue to act in court on the possibly outmoded principle that a prosecutor is there to prosecute. After you, my lord.
Order, please.
Sir Francis, you may resume for the Crown.
Your lordship. Now, Metcalf, I shall resume my cross-examination at the point I had reached yesterday when the court adjourned. Were you familiar with the country around Eagle Rock?
Yes, Sir Francis. I was at school in the district.
Oh, very well. And your wife, the deceased woman?
She'd never been to that part of the country. You see, she hadn't been well lately, and I hoped that the air...
Then you knew the country, and she did not. You knew the precipice at the Eagle Rock was dangerous, and she did not.
Well, no,
No and yes. Which is it?
Yes.
Yes. I suggest to you, Metcalf, that so far from warning your wife about the dangers of going too near the edge, you deliberately...
I did warn her. I did. The lady we met up there heard me.
Oh, yes. Yes, the mysterious lady you say you met on Eagle Rock.
She spoke to me. She heard me calling my wife back, and she laughed and said I was over-anxious. Then she walked on out of sight over the other side of the plateau.
And also, it would seem, walked out of reality.
What?
Are you aware, Metcalf, that since you first mentioned this lady to the police... The whole country has been ringing with appeals to her to come forward and give evidence.
Oh, I know that.
The newspapers have written columns about her. The BBC have broadcast special appeals to her.
Yes.
And if this lady had testified that she heard you warning your wife, it would have been the most conclusive and helpful evidence for you and extremely damaging to the case against you.
Oh, certainly. Somewhere there is somebody, this woman, who knows I am innocent.
Well, can you think of any reason, then, why this unknown woman should refuse to come forward in the interests of justice and give evidence?
I don't know, but how can I say what...
I suggest to you that the reason is she simply does not exist and never did.
She did. She heard me. She spoke to me. She was there, I tell you.
Let us reconsider the steps, Metcalf. First, you say your choice of the lakes for a holiday was governed... partly by sentimental reasons, your schoolboy associations, and partly by a consideration for your wife's health.
Yes.
How long do you suppose it would take to visit all the places of interest in Westmoreland and the Lake District?
Oh, I don't know. A week? 10 days, perhaps?
Ah, yet you engaged a room at the Waterhead Hotel in Ambleside for one night only.
Yes.
Why? Ambleside is 287 miles from London. You took a journey of 287 miles... for the purpose of spending one night in the English Lake District?
We might have stayed longer if
what? If your wife had not lost her life the morning after your arrival.
No, I mean, we could have.
Yes, now, what is it that you do mean, Metcalf? Was it your intention? I'm not asking whether you could have. Was it your intention to stay on at the hotel?
Yes.
Yes, you say? Didn't you hear the evidence of the hotel manager yesterday?
Yes.
Do you remember that he said he told you before you set out on this fatal walk that the hotel was full?
Yes.
And that if you intended to stay on, it would be prudent to book a room there and then?
I heard that. It's true.
And you answered that you would see.
No,
No?
I mean, yes.
Yes.
I was too preoccupied. I was worried about my wife.
Yes, yes, so you have told us. And finally, on this point... is it true, as the manager has sworn, that you and Mrs. Metcalf were quarreling as you set out on this walk?
No.
No? Be careful, Metcalf.
I mean, there was a difference between us.
A difference? which you were discussing loudly, openly, and angrily, well, is that right?
It might have seemed so.
Seemed so? Yes, I'm sure that the members of the jury will draw their own conclusions about this fine distinction between a quarrel and a difference. Now, Metcalf, no doubt you recall the testimony of the shepherd, MacBlaine.
Yes.
MacBlaine swore that he watched you and your wife through his binoculars from across the valley, that he saw you both on the summit of Eagle Rock, and that you raised some heavy object in your hands above your head as if to strike
her. It was only my camera. I was taking it off my shoulders.
Yes, MacBlaine says that he saw a struggle, and a moment later a body fell from the Eagle Rock.
MacBlaine was across the valley. But the woman we met knows the truth. She knows it was an accident.
So once again, it is the woman you met. Very well. Perhaps you can describe this woman. Was she tall or short, dark or fair?
I really don't know.
Oh, how unfortunate. Perhaps you can tell my lad and the jury what she was wearing.
Well, all women wear much the same nowadays.
Yes, yes, that's very convenient, isn't it? It relieves you of any obligation whatsoever to describe this lady to the court.
I've told from the beginning, again and again, the only thing that I remember about her. She had an ornament in her hat. A silver acorn with an arrow.
Yes, yes, you have said that. Now, I wonder why you remember that so clearly.
Because Phyllis, my wife, has had a similar one she wore sometimes.
I suggest to you that this silver acorn was in fact your wife's and that you transferred it to this mysterious lady on the principle of it being the one convincing detail in an otherwise bald and unconvincing narrative.
It's not fair!
Sir Francis, I think in a trial of this kind it would have been better not to have made that remark.
I beg your lordship's pardon. Very well, Metcalf, one more matter. Is it not true that 1 month before your wife's death, you took out a short-term insurance policy on her life for £3,000?
Yes, but I've explained. I've said that my wife thought something was going to happen to her. She's been ill, I mean. And we wanted the insurance.
Oh, you or she?
I. No, no, she. You're muddling me.
Yes, 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 yes. You seem very easily muddled. I suggest to you, Metcalf, that from first to last, your conduct was consistent, and only consistent, with an intention of getting rid of your wife.
I loved my wife.
That you had quarreled with her for some reason. Another woman, possibly.
I loved my
that
wife.
You lured her to the Eagle Rock, and that when you'd reached the plateau at the top, you seized her and threw her 1,000 feet to her death.
No, no, I didn't. I didn't. It was an accident. I swear before God Almighty, an accident!
My lord, I have no more questions to ask the prisoner.
Oh, Atkins, is my husband in his chamber?
Sir Francis is back from the courtroom, Lady Dearden, but he's been called for a consultation. Will you go in and wait?
Thank you, Atkins.
You'll find Colonel Mason there, Lady Dearden.
I see. Hello, Bill. How's Scotland Yard?
Hello, Yvonne. Are you joining Frank for dinner?
Oh, why, no. We're dining at home, Bill. I wanted to ask you to join us.
Well, thanks, Yvonne.
Good.
But I thought you two would be out tonight celebrating.
Celebrating? Oh, yes, my birthday, of course.
Many happy returns.
Thank you.
What is it, Yvonne? Something wrong?
I do feel wretched. Been at court all day listening to the Metcalf case.
A very difficult case. Frank's handling it superbly.
Superbly?
Well, look how he tied up Metcalf this afternoon. Everything the poor devil said got him in deeper.
I'm worried, Bill. Terribly worried.
Oh, my dear.
I watch Frank in the courtroom and I wonder. What's happening to him, Bill? Something is happening. Something has changed him.
Yvonne, it's your imagination.
You remember Frank and me when we were married. Is it only my imagination that he and I were so close? That there was always that response between us. But isn't that true, Bill, or am I deceiving myself?
Yes, it's quite true, my dear.
Well, then why do I feel that this Frank, whom I see in the court nowadays, is... Well, he's almost a stranger. We're losing something, he and I. It frightens me.
Oh, be fair, Yvonne. Frank's only doing his duty.
Yes, it's your way in England. Frank does his duty, Scotland Yard does its duty, everyone does his duty, and an innocent man may be hanged as a result.
My dear Yvonne, you Americans mustn't be so harsh about your poor relations. Is all this because you think Metcalf's innocent?
It's the way Frank has closed his mind, Bill. I've watched it grow in him since we were married. 8 hanging cases in 3 years, and with each one more and more assurance that he is right and less concern for his victim.
Yvonne, English law protects the defendant. We're very particular on that score.
It's Frank that I care about. What protects Frank? From himself, Bill.
Oh, Yvonne, my dear. Oh, hello, Bill.
Hello, Frank. We were just speaking about you.
Oh. A fertile subject, no doubt. I saw you in court again, Yvonne. Mm. You know, she's the most faithful member of my public, Bill.
Oh, Frank, how can you?
How can I what?
Oh, never mind, darling. Will the case be over tomorrow?
Yes, thank heaven. It's a wretched business.
And Metcalf, will he be convicted?
Well, I imagine so.
Frank?
Yes, my dear?
Why do so many people think he's not guilty?
People are apt to be wrong, you know.
Frank, will you do something for me? Won't you re-examine the case?
My dear...
Go over it all again by yourself. Well, isn't it possible, Frank, as a matter of logic, that Metcalf could be the victim of a series of coincidences?
As a matter of logic, yes. As a matter of probability, no.
Well, even if it's only an improbability, will you do as I ask? For my sake.
Of my love. My own heart's darling. I tell you once again, I don't like this case any more than you do. So far from being one of Her Majesty's bloodhounds, I really detest these prosecutions. But I've got my job to do. I've gone over the Metcalf case thoroughly. I can't see a weak link anywhere.
Oh, Frank.
And now, for the moment, perhaps you'll excuse me. I've got much to do, and tonight of all nights, I mustn't be home late for dinner.
Tonight of all nights?
Well, your birthday, my dear Yvonne. Surely you didn't think I'd forgotten, did you? Well, you did. Well, my darling, in due course, you will note that the occasion shall be marked by a minute token. Minute, but very choice. A rare distillation. Magic in a bottle. Well, I'll see you anon, William.
Frank, how can you be so frivolous?
Frivolous? Okay, Yvonne, I've had enough. Look, I'm sorry, Yvonne. The case has been rather a strain. I'll see you at home.
Yes, Frank. Oh, you coming along, Bill?
Well, I need Bill for a moment, if you please.
Very well.
Well, Frank?
Bill, I'm worried. Seriously, about Yvonne.
You?
Yes, something's grown up between us. A resistance, a strangeness. Do you know what I mean?
I suppose I do.
Well, I mean, after all, if a chap's in court all day battling witnesses and the judge and the opposing counsel, well, confound it, he wants his wife on his side when he comes home at night.
I see, Frank. But aren't there two sides to it?
Well, of course there are.
Now, think of Yvonne's feelings, Frank. This Metcalf case has hit her harder than you realize.
Yes, that does it. This Metcalf case. I get threatening letters from the indignant public. People I don't know ring me up, abuse me on the telephone, and now my wife joins in the chorus.
Frank.
Oh, I'm sorry, Bill. Just forget I ever brought it up.
As you like. See you later.
Yes. Oh, and would you please ask Sergeant Atkins to step in?
Right.
Series of coincidences, sir.
What did we say?
Atkins, oh, yes. Come in.
Are you ready to drive home, sir?
Yes, Atkins, but I've got a little surprise for you. I'm not going to have you escort me tonight.
Not? But my orders, sir.
Yes, I know.
Well, your own friend, Colonel Bill Mason, he says to me, Sergeant Atkins, I rely on you. Never let Sir Francis Dearden run the slightest risk. No, that's the voice of Scotland Yard, sir. Ever since you sent up that gang of black market thieves and said they'd get you, sir. A bad lot, that gang, sir.
Yes, nevertheless, all I want for the next few hours is to put all thought and sight of the police, even a plainclothes policeman like you, Atkins, entirely out of my mind. I've had enough of the machinery of justice for one day. I'll clear you with Colonel Mason.
Well, no doubt you'll be driving, sir. Your chauffeur will be with you.
No. I'm going to dismiss my chauffeur and walk home. What do you think of that? Well, good night, Atkins.
Bill? Oh, Frank not home yet?
Not yet, Yvonne.
Well, it's 5:30. He said he wouldn't be late tonight.
Oh, he has so much to do, Yvonne.
Sit down, Bill. Listen, would you do something for me tonight? For me and Frank?
What is it?
Try to persuade him to review the Metcalf case.
Oh, Yvonne,
I... Just let him see if there, well, isn't any loophole, that's all. I only want him to try, to make sure. I couldn't bear another death sentence tomorrow if he won't.
Do you think he'd listen to me?
I don't know. I've failed, certainly. His work possesses him so. Look at these evening papers. The Metcalf case, his masterpiece, his triumph, all over the front pages.
My dear girl, even from here I can see at least two other large and dominating items on that front page. One, the Queen visits an orphanage, and two, Diana Lewis, Daring woman explorer home from Arabia.
Yes, Diana Lewis, one column, The Queen and the Orphans, three, and Metcalf, five.
Well, the public, you know.
This Diana Lewis, Frank's spoken of her. Wasn't she a friend of his?
I believe she was.
I could almost wish it was another woman that was coming between us instead of these prosecutions. Even today on my birthday, he's late. And what's delaying him? Another brief? Another victim? Oh, Bill.
Hello? Looking for somebody up there, mister?
Miss Lewis. This is Miss Diana Lewis's flat, isn't it?
Oh, Miss Lewis, she's away, sir. Miss Lewis is in Arabia, she is, exploring.
Yes, she was exploring, madam, but she came home this afternoon. Miss Lewis? Diana, are you there? It's Frank Dearden, Diana. Well, Frank, what happened to you?
Oh, hello, Bill. Oh, Yvonne, my dear, I'm sorry to be late.
It's all right, Frank. Oh, darling, what's happened to your hand? Frank, that cut...
No, it's nothing. I hurt my finger. I caught it in the door of the car.
But you cut it badly. Here, let me see.
No. Please, don't flap, Yvonne. It's all right, I tell you. I've just put some iodine on it upstairs.
You look as though you need a drink, old man.
Oh, do I? Well, thanks.
I'll go up and change. Bill, you'll remember, I'm counting on you.
Now, what does she mean by that?
Oh, just that I must stay for dinner. Cheers.
Cheers. Sit down, Bill. Cigarette?
Thanks. Hungarian, eh? Where did you get these, Frank?
Oh, a little shop in a side street off the embankment. Light?
Thank you. Frank, do you mind another word about Metcalf?
About the gentleman who found the marriage state so attractive that he pushed his wife over a precipice? Yes, I do mind, but go ahead.
Now, of course, the evidence demands his prosecution for murder.
Well, you should know. You investigated.
Yes, quite. Still, it's circumstantial evidence, isn't it? And if that missing woman with the silver acorn in her hat had ever appeared in court, we might not have had a case.
Yes, I admit that, but the lady doesn't exist, Bill. We've tried everything to locate her.
Yes, I suppose you're right. But listen, Frank, every man has his unguarded hour, when everything's against him.
His unguarded hour?
Usually it passes, and we're none the worse for it. Suppose Metcalf's unguarded hour coincided with his wife's suicide. He's suspected of a murder he never committed. There is no door through which he can escape.
Is this the voice of Scotland Yard, Bill, or some semi-mystical, sentimental nonsense?
The unguarded hour.
What are you driving at, old man?
I'd like to try an experiment on you, Frank.
You would?
Yeah, a kind of parlor game. Call it proving an alibi. Will you play?
Well, if it amuses you, why not? Anything would be a relief after today.
All right. Now, assume a murder was committed somewhere in London this afternoon between 5 and 6 o'clock. And you came under suspicion.
Oh.
Now, where were you between 5 and 6?
Well, I can tell you exactly. At 5 o'clock, I was just leaving my chambers.
And then?
Oh, then I came home.
Oh, did you?
Well, what do you mean?
You came in 10 minutes ago at 6:30. From your chambers to this house would take 15 minutes at the outside to drive. And there's more than an hour and a quarter you haven't accounted for.
Indeed. However, I didn't come home in the car. I sent the chauffeur off and walked. I want the air and the exercise.
And what about Atkins, your guard?
Well, if you must know, I dismissed Atkins, too.
Most unfortunate.
Oh, why?
Because you've lost the only witness who could prove where you were at the relevant time. And worse than that, you did something you never do. Sent your bodyguard and your chauffeur away. Well, if there had been a murder, your conduct would be very suspicious, wouldn't it?
Well done, Scotland Yard.
Well, let's hear where you walked when you left your chambers.
Oh, I just walked down the embankment, crossed St. Stephen's Green, past the Houses of Parliament, and walked along the embankment the other side.
That accounts for something under 20 minutes, and it's in the opposite direction to this house, if you were walking home. But go on.
Well, I looked over the parapet, I watched the river traffic.
Oh, what an alibi. Have you a single witness to prove your story?
Well, of course not. Witnesses don't follow you around like that.
And yet you've always demanded that of a prisoner. Now think carefully. Did you meet anybody at all? Remember, your life may depend upon proof that you were on the embankment when the murder took place.
Well, I didn't meet anybody I know, but... Wait a minute, hold on. Yes, I bought a paper at the corner of Vauxhall Bridge. That man could give evidence for me.
But suppose he can't remember you?
Oh, then I can't prove it.
Which paper did you buy?
The Standard.
Which edition?
6:30.
The Standard doesn't have a 6:30 edition. Only the News and the Star do.
You're right. It was the News.
A flagrant contradiction. In fact, there's something very fishy about your entire story, my dear fellow.
Oh, why?
When you came home, you said you'd hurt your hand getting out of the car.
Oh, yes, so I did.
Well, what's the real truth? Did you walk home or come by car?
Well, I finally took a taxi.
And where did you get that cut? In a struggle, perhaps? You've lied to me somewhere now, haven't you?
Oh, come on. This is carrying a joke too far.
You're getting angry, aren't you? Now, but assuming that a murder had actually taken place, you would now be suspected in all seriousness, and I should be interrogating you equally seriously.
Oh, shut up, Bilford.
When you came in this evening, you were pale and agitated.
Oh, rot.
I don't say that I should apply as yet for a warrant for your arrest, Frank, but I should certainly put two plainclothes men onto watching you. Well, have I shaken your belief in the value of human evidence? Do you still feel like appearing in court tomorrow and pressing the charge against Metcalf?
I'll be there. Oh, thanks for the relief. Hello? Yes, he's here. Oh, it's for you, Bill. The butler switched it through here.
Oh, thanks. Oh, wait till I've answered it. And then I'll think up a few more teasers for you, my boy.
Oh.
Hello? Colonel Mason speaking. Yes? What's that? Say it again. Yes. Yes. All right, I'll come at once. Goodbye. Frank, a woman has been found murdered in Diana Lewis's flat this afternoon in Westminster.
Diana Lewis?
Yes, your old friend, the explorer. Between 5 and 6 o'clock.
You are listening to The Unguarded Hour, produced by the Theatre Guild on the air and presented by the United States Steel Corporation. And here, speaking for United States Steel, George Hicks.
Good evening. On Thursday of this coming week, we will all greet the new year. So tonight, speaking both for United States Steel and myself, let me wish a very happy, prosperous new year to all of you listening in. To United States Steel's more than 300,000 workers, and to its 275,000 stockholders, men, women, and institutions throughout the nation. This is also a good time to say thanks for listening to all of you who are with us on these Sunday nights, and at the same time pay a well-deserved tribute to all the folks connected with the Theater Guild for the fine job they always do in bringing to you, our listeners, the very best in dramatic entertainment over the air. Tonight, and very appropriate to this New Year's season, I would also like to tell you a little about the outstanding man who on Thursday, January 1st, will be the new president of United States Steel, succeeding Benjamin F. Fairless, who continues as chairman of the board and chief executive officer. The new president is Clifford F. Hood. He was born on a farm near Monmouth, Illinois in 1894, and his story is the story of a typical, hardworking, God-fearing American who has found his greatest success after many, many years of hard, enthusiastic work, persistent ambition, and abiding faith in the future. When Clifford Hood was in high school in Galesburg, Illinois, he was on his way to becoming a farmer like his father. Then something happened. A young electrical engineer came to board at the Hood house while working on a project near Galesburg. Before long, young Hood, too, decided to be an electrical engineer. And because this is America, he could not only make this free choice, but could and did move rapidly ahead in his chosen profession. After graduation from the University of Illinois, Hood's progress was indeed swift. He joined the American Steel and Wire Company in 1918 as an operating clerk. 6 weeks later, he went into service in the First World War. After his return in 1919, he went back to work for the same company as a foreman. From this job, he went up, up, and up. And on Thursday, January 1st, he becomes president of United States Steel Corporation. Clifford Hood's story shows how far a man can rise through hard work and vision in this country of ours. Mr. Hood enters his new position with an enormous background of contact experience with almost every operation of the corporation. I can think of no better way to conclude than to quote a few sentences from one of his recent talks. This is what he said. I think that as a nation, we are already well on our way to the most glorious period of our history. I know we're living in a troubled world. I know that big problems must be resolved and big dangers eliminated. But I have boundless faith in the future of our nation and of the world. I think we must go forward, that we must meet our great destiny with courage and with confidence.
You are listening to the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by United States Steel, the industrial family that serves the nation. We pause now for station identification.
KFI Los Angeles.
And now the curtain rises on the second act of The Unguarded Hour, starring Michael Redgrave as Sir Francis and Nina Foch as Lady Yvonne.
Frank?
Hmm?
Oh, is Bill gone?
Yes, dear. He was called out about half an hour ago. He said he'd try to be back, but don't count on him.
Did he say anything else?
Well, about what?
Nothing. How's your hand, Frank?
Oh, my hand's all right. Tell me, Yvonne, did you put Bill up to these fun and games with me this evening? I mean, some object lesson about the Metcalf case?
Object lesson?
Yes. Look, I know old Bill, Yvonne. He certainly had an object. He asked me to assume that a murder had been committed between 5 and 6 o'clock this evening and that I was a suspect and had to account for myself.
Huh?
And then, to our total confusion, a murder did occur just about that time. That's why Bill went back to the yard.
Another murder. And you'll prosecute Frank?
If I must. But that's not all. It was a woman. When they found her in the flat of somebody I used to know.
You knew?
A girl called Diana Lewis.
You mean the girl who's been in the papers?
Yes. But listen, Yvonne, I can get out of the case. We'd change you and I. I suppose tomorrow, as soon as I finish the Metcalf summation, we take a plane to the Riviera, hmm?
I don't know, Frank.
Hello? Oh, Bill, you're back.
Bill, Frank's just been telling me that you have another horror to deal with.
Yes, they've identified the victim, Frank. She isn't Diana Lewis.
Oh. Who is she?
We're not sure of her name yet. But she occupied Miss Lewis's flat in Mallet Street, which is just a little place over a shop, one of those foreign places, tobaccos, liqueurs, and so on.
And where is Miss Lewis?
We don't know yet. Oh, you remember, Yvonne, we saw in the evening paper that she got back only this afternoon from several months in the Arabian desert.
Mm-hmm.
But what does that matter? Miss Lewis wasn't the victim.
I'll tell you, Frank. A charwoman heard a man knocking at the door of the flat and asking for Miss Lewis. Sometime afterward, this woman had occasion to go into the flat and she found the body.
Yes, all right, Bill, all right. Spare Yvonne the gory details. She's upset enough already about the Metcalf case. And I suppose we move this inquiry to my study. I'm sorry, Yvonne.
It's all right, darling. I'll send up some sandwiches and a drink.
Oh, Yvonne, Tommy Granger's probably coming along to see me. That's Dr. Granger, the home office pathologist.
Yes, I know. One of your old cronies, Anne Frank's.
Now, he'll do the blood test in the case if necessary. Will you send him up straight away to me, Yvonne?
Well, what did they find in the flat, Bill? Any real clues?
Well, not two possibles. The most likely so far is a bottle of chartreuse.
Chartreuse?
Yes, bought this afternoon from that foreign shop downstairs that I told you about. It's unique stuff, the shop owner says. The customer bought two. One was in the flat. Now, the question is, where's the other?
Yes. You have a description of the customer?
Not very satisfactory. Tall, broad-shouldered, clean-shaven, bowler hat. Oh, it'd fit half the club members in London.
Yes, it would, wouldn't it? Oh, Tommy, come in.
Hello, you two. Frank, your wife said to go right on up.
Oh, Tommy, have you heard anything further on the Mallet Street murder?
Nothing yet for us blokes on the medical side, Bill. Inspector Wallace has something for you. He said he'd send it by messenger.
I see.
By the way, Frank, your wife told me you'd hurt your hand rather badly. I promised her I'd look at it. Will you let me cast a professional optic on it?
No, it's nothing, Tommy.
Well, let's see it, man. Thanks. How did you do this to your hand, Frank? A knife or a pair of scissors?
Neither. I jammed it in the door of a car. A taxi, to be precise.
Oh, who are you trying to humbug, Frank? That's a cut.
Hello? Let's call for you, Bill, from the yard.
Oh, thanks, old man. Colonel Mason here. Yes? Yes. Just a minute. I'll take it down.
Frank, it's clear this cut was made by a woman. That's elementary deduction. If it had been made by a man, why would you lie about it?
You mean it's your humor that's elementary, Tommy, don't you?
Oh, but seriously, old man, who is she? A pretty little party you've tucked away somewhere. In the old days before we both sobered down, you had lots of little friends, as I recall.
Tommy, apart from the fact that I love my wife, surely you know that in this kingdom it's still more important for a member of the government to be strictly moral than reasonably intelligent. Do you still keep up with your little friends?
Well, if I do, I have no cut on my hand to show for it. And that's what we're discussing, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, I have it down. Call me again, Inspector, if there's any more. Goodbye.
Well, Bill?
The call was about Mallet Street. They found a knife, probably used by the woman to defend herself. It had traces of blood on it. His blood.
Any fingerprints?
His? Oh, no. He apparently used gloves. Strangled her. It looks like work for you, Tommy. We expect the murderer will be a good-looking man with a cut on his right hand.
Why the right hand?
There were finger marks on her throat and traces of blood. His blood.
And Frank has cut his right hand. He certainly is distinguished, and he was by no means a model of virtue in days of yore. Well, there's your man, Bill. Look at him. He's the very picture of guilt.
Oh, shut up, Tommy. Now, this kind of joke makes small appeal to me.
May I come in?
Yvonne? Oh, come in, dear.
I've had Dawson make some sandwiches for you, Bill, and I brought a drink for all of you.
Oh, that's very good of you, Yvonne.
What about Frank's hand, Doctor? Is it all right?
Oh, he'll survive, lady dear.
Will you all have a drink with me? Frank brought this bottle home this afternoon for my birthday.
Oh, splendid. What is it?
It's rare old Chartreuse.
Chartreuse?
Hmm? Here, Bill.
Thank you.
Doctor?
Thank you, Lady Dearden.
And Frank.
Oh, many happy returns, Lady Dearden.
Thank you.
Cheers, darling.
Yvonne, will you forgive us? We were talking about something quite important, and if you could spare Frank for half an hour more.
Well, is it really important, Bill?
Yes, really.
Very well.
Frank, this afternoon you gave me an Hungarian cigarette you said you'd bought in a little shop off the embankment. Was that in Mallet Street?
Yes, it was.
Near Miss Lewis's flat?
Yes. I was going to tell you when Yvonne came in.
And the bottle of Chartreuse. There was one bottle found in the flat and this. What does the label on this bottle say, Tommy?
Green Chartreuse, guaranteed 150 years old, Chez Savarin, Mallet Street. And you bought this bottle, Frank, this afternoon?
I didn't say so.
Frank, I have here the label that was on the bottle in the flat. I had it taken off. It reads, Green Chartreuse, guaranteed 150 years old, Chez Savarin, Mallet Street, identical.
Yes, may I see it, please?
I've had it photographed in color, Frank, sir.
I shan't trouble to tear it up, thanks. Well, Tommy, what are you thinking about?
I was just...
Two and two make four, don't they? One bottle in Mallet Street and one here.
Why, it's absurd, of course.
Yes, you thought it no end of a joke just now, didn't you?
Oh, yes, but we were only joking.
I should be interested, Frank, to know what you have to say about buying this Chartreuse.
Well, if you must know, I did buy it at Savarin's, but a month ago.
A month ago? Frank, when Yvonne and I were in your chambers this afternoon, you made some facetious remark about commemorating her birthday with something choice, a rare bottle.
Yes, I did, but I... Well, I was thinking of this bottle of Chartreuse, if you must know.
And Yvonne says you brought it today for her birthday.
Well, that's what I told her. It was proof that I'd been thinking of her today, but I'd had it in the house all the time. It was just one of those, you know, everyday fibs that make matrimony possible.
I see.
Well, of course, that explains it, doesn't it, Bill?
Frank, why have you refused to tell me what you were doing between 5 and 6? We now know you were in Mallet Street, actually in the building where the murder took place. And here is another bottle of Chartreuse.
I have explained that.
And you have a cut on your right hand.
Oh, very well, then. I'll tell you the truth about that. I was followed by a man. He was probably one of those
dock thieves from that gang. He caught up with me, began abusing me, and struck at me with a knife.
I said it was a knife, Bill.
Where did this take place?
Oh, some back alley. I didn't notice. I was just walking, and my mind was on other things.
Who saw this happen?
No one. The street was deserted.
And what happened to the man?
Well, he got away.
But didn't you try to hold him? Didn't you shout?
No, I tell you, I didn't... Well, I didn't want any more publicity at the moment. I've been abused more than you know for my part in the Metcalf case, and... Well, I'm afraid I'm just about tired of it all.
Ye gods, Frank, none of this sounds like you.
You said you caught your finger in a taxi or car door.
Yes, I know I did, but I didn't want you to know that I'd dismissed Atkins. I was afraid he'd get into trouble with you. Well, you
do believe me, don't you, Bill? Oh, come on, Bill. Frank's upset. We should let him go to bed.
No, Granger. We must settle this now. You have not told me, Frank, where you were between 5 and 6.
And why should I?
Frank, what can I do?
Well, how should I know? Have some more chartreuse.
Don't joke, Frank.
Yes, it all began as a joke, didn't it? And it's become a nightmare. I tell you, I've explained everything.
Frank, you know very well if this involved anybody else, I'd regard it as my duty to arrest them on suspicion, and then I'd look for further evidence.
Well, let's hope further evidence will turn up, but it won't.
Frank?
Yes, Yvonne, what is it now?
A messenger just brought this packet for Bill.
Oh, all right, thanks. For you, Bill. Oh,
thank you. And from Inspector Wallace. Huh, a knife and a button.
A button?
He's put in a covering note. Satisfied knife was one used in struggle. Button and knife found on the copy of 6:30 edition of Evening News dropped on floor. The Evening News.
May I see the exhibits, please? Thanks. Well, the button seems to have a thread of some material attached.
Here's the inspector's report. Black coat button, bone composition, shellac finished. No maker's name. Thread hardly worn, so from nearly new coat. Frank, may we see the coat you were wearing when you came in?
You insist? Oh, very well, then. Come to my dressing room. There's the coat hanging on the chair where I left it.
May I?
Yes.
Gloves in pocket. Now, are these the gloves you were wearing when you cut your hand, Frank?
Yes, you can see the stain.
Oh, but the buttons, man. What about the buttons?
The buttons are all here.
Oh, thank heaven. You know, I could do with a drink.
Well, are you satisfied, Bill?
Wait a minute. One of these buttons has just been sewn on and not by a tailor. Whoever did it has left no neck to the thread.
What? Dawson!
What did you want, Frank? I let Dawson go out.
Yvonne, do you happen to know whether this coat has been touched?
Huh? Oh, yes, I remember. It's funny you should ask about it. I saw Dawson sewing a button on it just before he went out. He muttered something about it being a disgrace you should walk about with a button off your coat. Seems you came home with a button missing. What, is this something the matter?
No, nothing, my dear, nothing at all. Bill, Tommy, come back to my study, will you?
Now, Tommy, there's only one chance for him. Take the knife and Frank's gloves. Make your blood test. If the blood on the knife is different from that on the gloves, which is admittedly Frank's, then he's all right.
But supposing...
Do as he says, Tommy.
All right. Frank, old man.
Yes?
Good night, that's all. And good luck.
Frank, why did you do it?
Bill, for heaven's sake,
Frank, I'm one of your oldest and closest friends. Man, your only hope now is to tell me the truth. There might be circumstances which would justify me morally, of course not officially, in helping you to get away.
Oh, thank you. I don't want any help, and I'm not going away. I'm due in court tomorrow morning to finish the case against Metcalf.
Man, you're long past that. Oh, let me...
If you're going to arrest me tomorrow, you can take me as I leave the bar at the Old Bailey. That'll be something new. Now, I can tell you, all this started because of your silly game of alibis and circumstantial evidence and a hypothetical murder. Well, you've got your murder now, and you've pinned it on me. But I tell you, I'm innocent. Innocent.
Frank, how many convicted murderers do you know who have said just that? Good night. Yvonne, may I trouble you?
Oh, come in, Bill. What did he say?
I can't tell you now.
But it is good news.
I'm afraid not.
Oh, do really won't do anything about Metcalf.
I'm sorry, but there is one little thing. Will you give me Frank's passport?
Passport?
I promised him an official diplomatic clearance, and I'll take it along now and have it attended to at the yard.
My dearest Stevon, it's difficult to write this, but I may be called away suddenly. I feel that I owe you, and you alone, the complete truth.
Frank, excuse me.
Yvonne, what are you dressed up like that for at this time of night? Where are you going?
I must be by myself, Frank, for a while.
You're leaving?
I want to go away for a bit to think things over.
Yvonne.
Oh, Frank, why have you changed so? There's something terrible happening to you, and I'm afraid of it.
What, you say this to me?
It's Frank, if you could only just see things as I do. If you'd come away with me, why, we can still...
Look out of the window, Yvonne.
Hmm? Why?
Let's just go on. You see anything?
There are two men. They seem to be watching the house. Frank!
It's posted there by Bill, plainclothesman.
By Bill? What does it mean?
Something that I can't believe. I can't believe Bill is serious, and yet...
Frank, your passport.
Well, what about it?
Well, why did Bill take it? Did he lie to me?
Bill asked you for my passport.
Well, yes, he said...
Oh, no, never mind. I see.
Oh, Frank, darling, you're in trouble.
It's all been a nightmare. It still is. Suddenly, I found myself in a net. It's incredible. It's all coincidence, and yet... No, it can't be.
Frank, what is it? I can't bear to see you in danger.
Look, Yvonne...
What can we do? Can we just sit and wait?
We? Yvonne, then you won't leave me.
Oh, not now, darling. Oh, Frank, I never would have wanted to go if you'd still loved me.
But Yvonne, my dearest, of course I love you.
Oh, Frank, you can say it, but I asked you, I begged you. Why can't you have looked into the Metcalf case again? Just for my sake, just as an hypothesis... Even if it proved that I was dead wrong. But you wouldn't. You've grown so strange to me.
Yvonne, listen, I love you. Don't ever doubt it, whatever happens.
But what can happen? Tell me what it is.
Well, Bill thinks... Well, he believes... No, I can't explain. I can't speak of it. If it's going to happen, then let it. I shan't run away. They'll find me in court tomorrow if they want me.
You're going to court?
Yes. Well, at least it's something rational to do.
Oh, Frank, sit with me.
Oh, my dearest.
Hold me, Frank. Hold me.
Yvonne.
Yes?
This Metcalf case meant a great deal to you, didn't it?
Never mind now.
Well, Metcalf explained everything. Metcalf could prove nothing. And Metcalf will hang. Circumstantial evidence.
Frank.
Now, listen, Yvonne. In the time that remains before tomorrow morning, suppose we accept your hypothesis that Metcalf's evidence is the truth. A woman saw him on the rock, his missing witness.
Yes.
She heard him warn his wife. Now, that's his only chance.
His chance.
Now, she exists. She disappeared, but we have to find her, you and I. And by tomorrow morning... What time is it, Yvonne?
It's almost 3. You've been working nearly 4 hours.
Yes, I've been through the whole transcript of Metcalf's evidence and all the other witnesses, and there's nothing new, not a thing. Well, there it is, 3:00. We're still where we were at the start.
The woman, Frank, the missing witness. What do we know about her?
Oh, only that she had a silver acorn in her hat pierced with an arrow.
A silver acorn? Well, why would a woman wear that?
Well, you're a woman. You tell me.
I don't know. It's odd. Still, it might be a keepsake or something, or perhaps a coat of arms, a crest.
A crest? Yvonne, quick. Hmm? Give me Cap's heraldry. That big red book on the bottom shelf. That's it.
Here.
Acorn. Here. In northern England, sometimes found in conjunction with a piercing arrow... Yvonne.
But what does that mean?
Look, who lives near Eagle Rock with the right to wear such a crest? Now, turn to the section on Westmoreland, Yvonne.
Westmoreland. Here, Frank.
Well, it's 100-1 against, but...
There, Frank, there's a name, Lewis.
Yes, that's what I found.
Lewis.
I think I've got it. Now, why has that woman's name been on my mind all day?
What woman?
Diana Lewis, the explorer. Now, she's the one. I'm sure of it. It fits. She's been out of the country all these months.
But where is she now?
Yes, where is she?
No, no, didn't the late paper say she left the airport in a hurry to avoid more publicity?
Yes, and if we can't produce her in court...
Who's that? Frank, I've come back.
Oh, Bill.
I left the back door on the latch, and I came in that way. I should like a word with you, Frank, please.
Yvonne, darling, will you... Oh, darling, darling, it's all right. But... It'll be all right.
Oh, Frank.
Frank, I've brought back your passport. I'm afraid I've been your friend longer than I've been at Scotland Yard. There's a newspaper plane leaving from Croydon for Paris at 5 o'clock.
Thanks, Bill, but I'm not going to run for it. I'll be in court tomorrow if you want me.
For heaven's sake, Frank, you can't. Don't touch that phone, man. Don't.
I'm sorry, Bill. Hello? Yes, this is Sir Frank Dearden's house. Scotland Yard, you want Colonel Mason?
Give me the telephone and get out.
What's that you say? Some new evidence about the Mallet Street murder. Just heard about it and wants to give him some information. Well, this is Sir Francis Dearden speaking.
Frank!
Who did you say? Just put her through to me. Never mind the Mallet Street case. I must speak to her. Now, Diana Lewis? Good evening, Diana. Or rather, good morning.
Sir Francis, I shall allow this witness to be sworn at your request, unusual though it be to call a witness at this stage. May I ask who this lady is?
We shall call her indirectly, my lord. But before we proceed, your lordship, you will, of course, understand that it is my duty as counsel for the prosecution to place before the court any and all evidence of importance, whatever may be the result on the case for the Crown.
Naturally. I'm sure nobody would ever accuse you, particularly, Sir Francis, of being unfair to an accused person.
Now, that observation, my lord, is certainly gratifying. Call Miss Diana Lewis.
Miss Lewis. Bring in Miss Lewis.
Now, Miss Lewis?
Yes, Sir Francis.
Did you make a journey last spring up north to the Lake District?
Yes. I went north to say goodbye to my grandmother who lives in the Lake District. She's my only living relative and I was about to set out on my journey to Arabia.
Ah, do you know a place called Eagle Rock?
Yes.
Did you go there on May the 15th last?
15th? Yes, that would be about it.
Do you recognize anybody in this court now whom you met on the Eagle Rock that afternoon?
Here? Yes, that man sitting over there behind the wooden rail.
Metcalf, stand up.
Yes, Sir Francis.
You recognize the prisoner, Miss Lewis?
The prisoner? I didn't. Yes, I met him. He was there with his wife. In fact, I had some conversation with him.
Oh, what was said between you?
Well, it's so long ago, really.
Now, Miss Lewis, I earnestly beg you to search your memory. This man's life may depend on your answer.
Well, I heard this gentleman, the prisoner, calling to his wife as I came up the path.
Yes?
He said something to her about not going too near the edge. He was warning her of the danger.
Warning her?
Yes, I remember that.
Ah, one more question, Miss Lewis. Do you have a silver crest, an acorn pierced by an arrow that you wear in your hats?
Why, yes. Once in a great while. I'm afraid I don't understand. What is that to do with...
It's all right, Miss Lewis. You knew nothing whatever about this case until your return to England last night?
No, and I don't feel I really know anything about it now.
Thank you. Now, my lord, unless my friend Mr. Wyndham Brown, on behalf of the prisoner, wishes to ask this lady any further questions... Ah, my learned friend shakes his head. My lord, I would respectively ask your lordship to direct the jury to acquit the prisoner forthwith.
Well, Frank, you've done all right by Metcalf. Now, can you prove your own alibi?
I can't, Bill. I told you the whole truth, except for one thing, and I'll tell you that now. I was at Diana Lewis's flat.
I'm listening.
You know I bought those cigarettes at Savoy's. I'd read in the evening news Diana Lewis had just got home. I had a sudden impulse to go upstairs and congratulate her. I knocked, got no answer, and came away.
Frank, We have interviewed the charwoman at the building.
Yes?
I'm sorry to say that this woman, having seen a photograph of you, identifies you as the man who visited the murdered woman.
It's fantastic evidence of identification. Well, you know what that's worth.
I'm afraid there's more to it than that.
Yes, come in. Ah, Tommy.
Well, Tommy, have you completed your blood test?
Yes, Bill, I have.
And?
Well, I've done it, and...
Go on. I know. You're just one more, Tommy. Your test clinches the whole case against me, doesn't it? Your test proves that the blood on the murderer's knife and on my gloves is identical, doesn't it? You all know that I'm a murderer, don't you? You've trapped me. You've identified me, tested me, haven't you? You read it up or down, it all fits, doesn't it? Well, I tell you that you're all wrong. You're wrong. Dead wrong. Your evidence is wrong. I'm innocent. I'm absolutely innocent, so help me God.
Teddy, Frank, for heaven's sake.
I'm sorry, Frank. I did this test twice. The only thing I can tell you is I got a slight difference in the percentage of probability in the two results. And, of course, I'll make a point of that in my evidence at your trial.
My trial? Oh, yes.
I'm afraid so, Frank, and now I must do my duty. Francis Edward Pickering Dearden, I arrest you for the murder of Eileen Gladys Gates on...
Excuse me, intruding, Sir Francis.
Yes, Sergeant Atkins, what do you want?
Atkins, you can't come in here now. Get out, please.
Oh, I'm sorry, Colonel. I didn't know it was official. I just wanted to tell Sir Francis I knowed where he was yesterday afternoon. Well, I'll just be going along.
Wait a minute. Where was he yesterday?
Well, he went calling at a lady's flat in Mallet Street.
Mallet Street?
He thought you'd give me the slip, eh, Sir Francis? But the Colonel's orders to me is orders.
You followed him?
Oh, certainly, Colonel. Well, I'll go along. I know I'm late reporting for duty today, Sir Francis, but where do you think I've been, eh? I've been busy following the man what knifed you.
He was knifed at Mallet Street.
What? Oh, why, Colonel, I'm afraid at Mallet Street, Sir Francis meets only a disappointment. The lady wasn't at home, Colonel.
Yes, go on, man, go on.
But didn't I always tell you, Sir Francis, the Colonel was right? Them dock thieves would try to get you, and try they did, when you was unwise enough to go wandering alone down that alley off the embankment.
The dock thieves?
The embankment?
Well, certainly, gentlemen. When the charwoman at Mallet Street calls out to him, there's nobody home, Sir Francis continues his walk. Well, suddenly, in this empty by street, a man who's been loitering behind takes a cut at him and dashes off. Well,
why wasn't I told all this last night?
Because I arrested the man only half an hour ago, sir, in Listen Grove.
Thank you, Atkins. Thank you. You're certainly a friend in need.
It was easy, sir. One foot in your pocket.
Frank, I saw Metcalf released. It's all right.
Yes, love, it's all right with him now. You were right.
But what about you, darling? Your trouble with Bill?
Bill was wrong, dearest. He has a murder to solve, which I shan't prosecute.
Oh, my dear.
But if Bill wants to come home with us now, he he can finish that bottle of Chartreuse.
Theater Guild on the Air production of The Unguarded Hour, sponsored by the United States Steel Corporation. We express our thanks to our stars, Michael Redgrave as Sir Francis and Nina Foch as Lady Yvonne. Our thanks also to the other members of our cast as Colonel Mason, Murray Matheson, as the Judge, Malcolm Keane, as Dr. Granger, Felix Deebank, as Sergeant Atkins, Guy Spall, as Diana Lewis, Sarah Burton, as John Metcalf, John Merivale. And now let's hear from Van Johnson with a word about next week's play.
Hello there, everybody. Next week, to begin the new year on a happy note, the Theater Guild on the Air is bringing you a dramatization of Phil Strong's famous and funny novel, State Fair, which if you didn't enjoy as a book, you undoubtedly did in one of its several motion picture versions. I'm going to play a newspaper reporter named Pat, and it's my good fortune to have Nancy Olson as the girl I make love to. She joins me in inviting you to tune in. Meanwhile, Happy New Year.
And now a special message from George Hicks.
Do you know what Crusade for Freedom is? It's the means by which the American people send messages of hope and truth to the millions enslaved behind the Iron Curtain. Funds raised through the Crusade for Freedom support Radio Free Europe and Radio Free Asia. These two freedom networks pierce the Iron Curtain night and day. They strike at the heart of communist oppression because truth about communism is the one thing most feared by the Kremlin. Many people who have escaped from behind the Iron Curtain broadcast over these networks to identify informers by name, denounce brutality, and expose the communist line. The problem now is to help carry on this fight. Send your contribution to Crusade for Freedom, care of your local postmaster. Why not do it today? That's Crusade for Freedom, care of your local postmaster.
Remember, next week on the United States Steel Hour, State Fair, starring Van Johnson and Nancy Olson. And remember, too, that the trademark of United States Steel, USS, on any steel product is your guide to quality steel. The Theater Guild on the Air is under the supervision of Lawrence Langer and Teresa Helburn, with Armina Marshall, executive producer. S. Mark Smith is editor. Music was composed and conducted by Harold Levy. Michael Redgrave may currently be seen in the J. Arthur Rank production, The Importance of Being Earnest, a Universal International release.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting. KFI, Los Angeles.
You have been listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web. You can subscribe at no charge through Apple Podcasts, Podbean, or RSS. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you can join us again next week for another hour of entertainment from the golden age of radio. Until then, this is your host, Justine Ward, saying so long for a while.